Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout.
It's kind of crazy to think about how we've spent the last few months talking about the Fallout TV show and last week talking about a fan film project. And now I'm back to talking about pre-war businesses, picking up from a thing that I was doing months ago and had been doing for a number of months. And catching back up with that, we are still alphabetically only in the C's. That's right, A, B, C. This week, we are starting with Coffee King. And we'll see how many we get through, but I have a feeling we won't be getting to the D's this week. It just goes to show how many of these little details are across the games and the series. And it makes sense, because these are some of the ways that the game tells the story of the pre-war events and the companies and businesses and CEOs and people who were so instrumental in the way that things played out up until the Great War. And then for some of these businesses, as we've discovered, continued on afterwards. So this week we'll be discussing everything from, well, coffee to manufactured domes that protect you from radiation and nuclear fallout to a real-world firearm company that made it into the Fallout games. Let's get into it. Some of these businesses don't have a lot of information. In fact, this one, Coffee King, only has one mention. Well, one mention across two games. That specific location that Coffee King is mentioned happens to be on a coffee machine. This is a 3D model of a coffee machine, one of those old-timey looking coffee machines you would see at like a diner. And on the side, it says Coffee King. Shows up in Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. And that's it. We have nothing other than that, other than some concept art that was released showing that they were designing this to look a little more Art Deco than the one we actually get in the game. The one we get in the game is pretty simplified, and probably because they wanted to reduce the number of polygons and things like that. It looks, and I mean, this is an audio podcast, right? It looks like one of those old-timey coffee machines you would see in a diner, but the concept art version has these like wings on the logo that goes like underneath the logo and to the front where the big red light is that says when the coffee's ready, and even some little bars that kind of run along the top of it, which aren't actually modeled in the game. But other than that, we don't really know what Coffee King was, where it started, how long it lasted, who worked there, any of those other details, other than you can find this as an object in Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. So let's move on to something a little more exciting.
You gaze upon one of America's greatest minds, preserved through the miracles of science!
When I say exciting, I'm talking about a leasing company. But I know that's confusing. Why would a leasing company be exciting? Well, the Cole and Parker Holdings Limited Leasing Company wasn't just a business for leasing things and handling finances or whatever leasing companies do. I don't know. I don't do leasing. What this company actually did was to lease out something really cool at a place called Black Mountain Ordnance Works. Now, if you've played through Fallout 76, you've probably come across this location. In fact, this was one of the locations that was in the game in the early years that led to a lot of speculation about what other things we were going to discover, because this location has these secured shielded domes. And inside each of the domes was something. These domes were leased out by different companies. Companies like Nuka-Cola or Green Custom Defense Systems, which we'll get to when we get to the G's. But also, there is another dome at this location. Most of them, you cannot either get into them or they're empty. Those two you specifically can get into in the games. But there is another that is even more mysterious. So let's take them in order. Dome number two, and it's called TNT Dome number two. And of course, you can get into these when you get a key. Some of them have to do with locations or things you have to do in the game in order to unlock some of these. In this case, this requires a key that's hidden in the wall safe in the cliffside underneath a large northernmost house at Point Pleasant in the cabins area. The wall safe can be opened by using a one-time guaranteed password given by a terminal in the house above the hidden wall safe, which in turn requires M Green access code to obtain, which in turn requires the stolen terminal passcode to obtain, which in turn requires the rusted key to obtain. If that's not convoluted enough, I don't know what else is. But once you get in there, this is what you find. Alien blaster rounds, plans for an alien blaster fusion mag, 3 hazmat suits, and a note that is labeled initial analysis that says this. Initial tests indicate these could very well be of alien origin, potentially our most significant find in a long time. The material inside is complex and high destructive, not highly destructive, just high destructive. So take extra care when handling the samples. Now, it makes sense that this dome would be so hard to get into because it seems to be a location where somebody was investigating alien technology, which explains kind of what these domes are actually for. They're highly secured locations that are very hard to enter, but they're also designed to last, to be indestructible, to be the kind of thing that if some sort of catastrophic thing were to happen, the contents inside would survive. Because they're very important, or at least in this case, they're very mysterious. All right, on to dome number 3. This is the Nuka-Cola one. This requires a key in a locker on the floor at the end of the hall in Snackability Research and Development in the Kanawa Nuka-Cola plant. So you go to the plant, you find the key in a locker. Then the locker can be opened using the Nuka-Cola locker key, which in turn requires a key to Clara's box to obtain, which in turn requires the toolbox key to obtain. So another whole quest of, well, unofficial quest of finding these different keys in order to unlock different things in the game. This is one of the reasons why Fallout 76 is actually really cool when you get into the details, is that sometimes there's this complexity that leads from one thing to the next thing to the next thing that finally gets you something really, really cool. In this case, here's what's inside. A plan for the T-51 power armor with the Nuka-Cola paint, which of course looks awesome. And then 2 spawns for a random variant of several Nuka-Cola themed outfits, including bottle and cappy orange jacket and jeans, bottle and cappy red jacket and jeans, cappy jacket and jeans, Nuka World gazer jacket and jeans, and Nuka World jacket and jeans. So lots of jackets and jeans having to do with Nuka-Cola stuff, including bottle and cappy, who were the little mascots that would run around in Nuka World. So this is a whole side thing where you can go find all these different keys, and eventually it leads to this location where you can unlock things in the game that you don't have to buy in the shop. You can just unlock them here, which is pretty cool. Now, why this was hidden away in a bunker-like location, I don't know. Maybe because of the T-51 power armor? It also makes you wonder, and this isn't the first time we've seen Nuka-Cola power armor in a game, but why would there be Nuka-Cola painted power armor? It seems like anybody who had power armor, at least in the pre-war times, wouldn't have had the authority to tell the United States government that they were going to paint Nuka-Cola on it. We do know that there is cross-promotion stuff in the Nuka-Cola DLC for Fallout 4. So was this some sort of cross-promotion thing that they were doing at this location? Maybe. And maybe it was set up at a time before the bombs dropped where getting your hands on some T-51 power armor would have been controversial, or at least a little bit more of a delicate situation, the kind of thing that they would want to keep under lock and key. All right, so those are the first two, but what about dome number 7? This, again, requires a key located at the Overlook cabin, which requires a generated password and 2 paired keys. So it's the same sort of thing. You have to go from one place to the next. You have to unlock different keys. You have to go take those keys to another place. One of these keys is in the top of Tanagra Town under a trifold flag on the 2nd floor of a ruined house on a hard to reach ledge. And one is in a bathroom stall at the Kanawa Nuka-Cola plant. So if you happen to run across these and find them, you would realize that, okay, these two work together. The generated password is located in Ingram Mansion and requires a Nuka-Cola marketing access code located underneath the crashed plane on a suitcase. So you're pulling again from all of these different locations around the map in order to finally unlock this one location. What do you get when you unlock it? Well, this is even more interesting, and this makes a lot more sense for why it would be locked away in one of these bunker-like domes. You get a plan for the X-01 Power Armor Nuka-Cola Quantum Paint. So you can make in Fallout 76 the X-01 Power Armor. Now, what is XO1 power armor? Well, it was one of the most advanced designs of power armor before the Great War. Now, the Great War happened, stalled the development, and eventually development was picked up again by, you guessed it, the Enclave. Now, this eventually led to other developments in power armor technology, including some designed by the Institute. And that's a whole another thing that we'll probably have to save for another episode as we dig into different types of power armors. There was a power armor episode I did really early on the show, and I feel like I need to do an update to cover a lot of the things that haven't been discussed yet on this program. But that means that XO1 power armor with Nuka-Cola quantum a paint plan is in this specific location, which seems odd, but we do know that Nuka-Cola, again, through some sort of cross promotion thing with Project Cobalt, which was the military and chemical warfare project that the United States was doing, were showcasing this new technology or an early version of this technology before the bombs dropped in partnership with Nuka-Cola. And you have to remember, Nuka-Cola was like Coca-Cola. It was associated with being all-American, that all-American brand that everybody knows and loves. And so connecting that all-American kind of ideology with a marketing campaign that also connects to the development of military technology, everybody gets all behind that. Americans, hoorah, we're going to take on the commies, all of that stuff. It all starts to make sense. So this location not only has a paint for a Nuka-Cola quantum version of this armor, but also a mini nuke. You heard that right, a mini nuke, which I guess makes sense for why it's in a dome that would protect it from any external forces that might set off the nuke, or if the nuke were to set off, it would be contained inside this dome somehow. I don't know how that works. I don't know why you would put a mini nuke in with a plan for paint for power armor and make it so hard to get, other than from gameplay reasons, it's kind of fun, right? But there's got to be a story there, right? Why a mini nuke along with this secret power armor paint? I don't know. If you have some theories about that, let me know what you think. So this is all associated with Cole and Parker Holdings Limited, the leasing company who dealt with storage and disposal stuff. So if you want to go check out this location, I recommend it. It was one of the most mysterious locations in early Fallout 76. And if you're new to Fallout 76, it'll be new to you too. So go to Black Mountain Ordnance Works. And if you need to look up how to get each of the keys, I'm sure there are guides online that'll tell you how to do that so you can get into each of these locations. All right, all that talk about Nuka-Cola is making me hungry. And what goes better with a Nuka-Cola than pizza? Colantoni's Pizzeria is our next pre-war business. This is an unmarked location in Point Lookout. Now, unmarked means that it doesn't show up as a like location on your map that you can fast travel to. It also usually means that there's not a whole lot you can do in that location. For example, you can see the building, you can see the sign where it says Colantoni's Pizzeria above the building. You can even see other signage along the front of the building, which is all kind of broken down, talking about like refreshments and cold beverages. In fact, it's next to a fizzy location and it's like along this boardwalk. And what's left of the sign clearly says Colantoni's Pizzeria with an Italian flag and what's left of the metal frame of the big sign at the top of the building. But otherwise, there's not a whole lot here, not a lot going on. And there aren't any other locations in any of the games for Colantoni's Pizzeria. So either this is a pizza chain and we just haven't seen it in those locations, or the designers just didn't decide to include it, or this was just a one-off location. This is like a little mom-and-pop pizzeria that's only located at Point Lookout and nowhere else. And that's about all we can figure out from the information we currently have.
Oh, I don't know anything, mister. I just think it. And then I don't.
So this one I teased at the beginning of the episode. Sometimes you get real-world companies, business names, product names, things like that in the Fallout games. Usually it's because they were in one of the first two Fallout games back when these were more of kind of a, I don't know, a smaller thing. Game development in the late 90s, especially for PC, was not at the magnitude it is now. You did not release a game expecting to sell millions and millions of copies and end up with a TV show about it or anything like that. In fact, back in the late 90s, if you got 100,000 copies of a game sold on PC that wasn't on consoles, that was pretty good. Now, what that means for using these names is that they just weren't on the radar. It's not that you could use names from businesses and things like that and you wouldn't get a lawsuit or somebody wouldn't come after you for it. It's more like if you flew under the radar enough, nobody really cared. And so they just didn't follow up with it. Well, we have Colt Firearms in Fallout. Specifically, Fallout 1, Fallout 2, Fallout Tactics, and also they were planned to be in Van Buren, the non-released, non-finished Fallout 3 that we never got. So let's break it down. In Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, there is the Colt 6520 10mm pistol. In Fallout Van Buren, in the tech demo for it, we have the Colt 6504 9mm autoloader. In Fallout Tactics, we have the Colt M1911A1, but it's also given the name Colt 45. Now, these are all pistols, some more based in reality than others, but then there's also the Colt Rangemaster hunting rifle in Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. So we do have a Colt rifle in the games as well. Oh, but that's not all. Turns out that these Colt guns are not just relegated to these really old games or games that never came out. In fact, there's a little bit of a hint in Fallout 76, yes, Fallout 76, not one of the older games, that seems to suggest that we have a Colt gun in that game as well. Now, you're not going to find it in like the in-game description or the name of the gun. It's just called the Gatling gun. But you will find, if you zoom in real close, that there's a patent plate with some text on it, which is hard to read. And specifically, the word Colt seems to be, well, I don't know, purposely smudged? It says, from what I can tell, Gatling's battery gun, patent November 8th, 1814, March 14th, 1884, February 22nd, 1891, made by, and then the first letter is smudged out, but it could be a C. It may be a different letter, though, because of the way that it looks like it might have existed. It almost looks like it's a B that was smudged out, but it makes you wonder if this is supposed to say Colt. But it says smudge, O-L-T apostrophe S, like made by Colts, patent firearms manufacturing company, Charleston, West Virginia, USA. So you might be wondering, is that the right location? Is this the real world company headquarters for Colt Manufacturing Company, LLC? And it turns out that it's not. West Hartford, Connecticut is the current location. Originally, it was in just Hartford, Connecticut, and that is not the same place. So was this purposely changed in order to protect themselves and say, well, no, this is a fictitious name, and in fact, you can't even see the first letter? Maybe. But there is one other little hint here. Turns out that the Gatling gun is not the only gun with some association to Colt in Fallout 76. There's a single-action revolver, which design-wise looks very, very similar to a classic Colt revolver. And the reason why we have a connection to the Colt name is because the model in the files is labeled Colt SAA. Now, it's just a file name, so this may have been a shortcut for the designers to keep in mind what this is without having to look at the model and just kind of remind themselves, oh yeah, this looks like a Colt revolver. But isn't that suspicious? Now, there is one other little Easter egg here. The .45 auto pistol in Honest Hearts is very similar to the M1911 Colt model. Probably a callback to the previous version from the previous game. But, you know, this seems like there's a lot of evidence here for the current games paying homage to this company that traditionally was part of the early Fallout games. And so, inevitably, people are going to have questions about this. Does this mean that Colt is in canon? This is a canon company that shows up in the Fallout universe, and it also matches the one from our universe, or is it just a coincidence, or is it something that was just retconned because of copyright reasons? You know, this stuff gets complicated, right? But it is fun. It's fun to dig into this stuff. So there you go. Colt Manufacturing. It's time for that spring reset. I'm taking a look at everything in my closet and figuring out that, oh no, this absolutely needs to go, and it's about time I replace things so that my clothes aren't older than my 15-year-old. Now, you might think that they lasted that long because they were well made, but no, they're in terrible condition. Unlike the new jeans I just got from Quince. Jeans have always been my personal go-to because you can kind of wear them for lots of different things, but maybe they're not your thing. Maybe you're looking for, I don't know, 100% European linen with insanely soft flow knit active wear fabric. It's definitely getting warmer, and their flow knit active wear is moisture wicking, anti-odor, and soft enough that you'll actually want to wear it every day. So pick out what you want. You can't go wrong because they have prices 50 to 60% less than similar brands. And like I said before, they are high quality. I continue to wear their clothes all the time, and I know that these new jeans are going to last me a lot better than the other things in my wardrobe. And on top of it, they look great. They're so comfortable. And I spent just as much on the jeans that I am now cleaning out of my wardrobe. So if you're looking for something better, just all around better, go check out Quince. So go do it right now. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/falloutlore for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. Go to quince.com/falloutlore for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/falloutlore. And now for something not nearly as exciting. Commonwealth Savings and Loan. This is a pre-war bank in the Commonwealth. It shows up in Fallout 4. And the only reason we know about it is that it is mentioned in a terminal entry at the South Boston Police Department. The entry says, Case 385-AR, Duncan Armed Robbery Logs. Evidence log entry RODU-00. Object, 1X tape surveillance footage taken from Commonwealth Savings and Loan. Status, in evidence. South Boston Cabinet, E14. Okay, so this establishes that this was a location and there was an armed robbery at some point, right? But what else do we know? Well, the next entry says evidence log entry RODU-01, 1x10mm pistol recovered from suspect. Status, in evidence. South Boston Cabinet, E14. So same cabinet. The next entry and final entry of this specific police case says evidence log entry RODU-02, object 1X gas mask recovered from suspect, status in evidence, South Boston Cabinet E14. Now, there's not a whole lot here about the Commonwealth Savings and Loan, but we do have little details that show up in the game that point to a specific location, and chances are, when you come across these in the games and you go to that cabinet and you open it up or you hack the lock or whatever, you will find in it a pistol and a gas mask, which is great because it adds to the world building of the universe and makes everything feel like it actually makes sense. Now, it's kind of amazing hundreds of years later that those objects would have stayed in that cabinet and nobody else discovered them. But hey, you know, video games. There is one other little detail here. We know the name of the primary suspect, R. Duncan. Just the letter R and the last name Duncan. It shows up at the beginning of the log, and that's all we know. We don't know why there was a robbery, but it does kind of paint this idea of, I don't know, a movie scene where a guy holds up a bank and he has a gas mask with him because he's getting ready to gas everybody to escape, and he brings a pistol, and I guess there was surveillance evidence because it doesn't look like he was brought into custody. So maybe this was an open thing that never got solved, and then the bombs dropped. And who knows what happened to him afterwards. It's moments like these in the games where I like to come across this stuff and then imagine that, I don't know, that feral ghoul you see around the corner might be this R. Duncan individual who survived as a feral ghoul until the current moment. And sometimes in the games, they will put those kinds of Easter eggs in. They will have a ghoul that connects to some little entry somewhere that might even have a name or just be dressed in a certain way. But I don't know of anything around this specific situation that points to that. But if there is somebody out there who has run into something mysterious about this location and what might have happened to R. Duncan, definitely let me know. All right, we got time for one more. Computectron. This is one of those names that makes me think of like 1990s tech companies. Computectron, again, a pre-war company. It's mentioned in a terminal at the Office of Urban Planning in the office building in Fallout 3. Now, at that location, there is a workstation terminal with some correspondences, and let's go through them because this is where the reference comes from. DC Metro Office of Urban Planning, Human Resources Management System. You are logged in as Emily Wise, who was an employee there. Submit timesheet. Time since last report. 72,982 days. Now, you see this in the Fallout games, right? Where they're like, well, this is something that hasn't been updated, but the computers continue to run for hundreds of years, right? Our records indicate that you currently have an inadequate ratio of time worked to time passed. Your current workload balance, minus your last reported paid time off, indicates that you will be required to work an additional 417,040 extra hours in order to equalize your ratio. Please schedule a meeting with your immediate supervisor and submit your HR 2847-A with a written plan to make up the lost time. Thank you, and have a productive day. So, of course, this is a joke about corporate bureaucracy and how everything's automated in ways that no longer even make any sense. But there's more. Requested tax information. The National Tax Record Tracking System, NTRTS, is currently experiencing downtime due to maintenance. Should you require immediate assistance with your tax-related issue, please contact the Office of Human Resources representative assigned to your group. The next entry says, review personal information. Searching. Error, error, and then a bunch of just random numbers and letters. Thank you. And then this is where we get to the part that Computectron is mentioned. Contact technical support. We at Computectron, a division of the Skex Corporation, a wholly owned subsidiary of Diamond Inc., appreciate your concern and applaud your desire to help us improve our products. Currently, we are detecting no outstanding issues with your system and assure you that any problem or complaint you are currently experiencing is simply a misperception on the part of the user. It's all user error. Please refer to the Integrated Human Resources Management System Documentation, Section 465.34A, Section 756, Paragraph 75, for more information on this message. Thank you. So clearly this joke just keeps going. It's explaining how bureaucratic and tied up all of these systems are. Even the joke of Computectron being a division of Skex Corporation, which is a subsidiary of Diamond Incorporated, is a joke about our current corporate system, right? The idea that businesses own businesses who own businesses, and none of these names really matter. It's the joke that they're all kind of bundled together. But there is one more entry about the system. Welcome to the Integrated Human Resources Management System version 2.3, a joint product of the District of Columbia Office of Software Management and the United States Office of Computational Organization, developed through contracts with Computectron, a division of the Skex Corporation, a wholly owned subsidiary of Diamond Inc., copyright 2056, all rights reserved. And so the joke just keeps going. The government is full of these long names that don't really mean anything anymore. And these businesses are bundled inside businesses. And it's all just this complex web that doesn't make living or doing things or even just using their system to solve a problem any more helpful. And every day, every year, these jokes become more real. How much of our own world feels like this every time you have to try to do anything? So there you go. We don't know a whole lot about Computectron other than it was a joke and a terminal entry, and we probably won't hear anything else. It hasn't shown up since Fallout 3, but who knows? Maybe we'll get some more of these kinds of jokes in a future Fallout game. I'm sure we will, but will Computectron be tied to them? I hope so.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
So there you go, more pre-war businesses and their crazy stories. I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. I'll be continuing this series in future episodes, but I also will be starting another series to go along with it and kind of ping pong between the two. It's in the works right now, but I won't reveal too much, but I'm excited about it. Also, you might be wondering, thinking back on stuff I was doing before the TV show came out, whatever happened to comparing the vaults to each other to see which vault would be the worst? And honestly, just from my perspective of trying to put those together and make them make sense and fit together, It was more difficult and not as enjoyable and fun as I expected it to be. So I think I'm going to put that on the back burner for now. We'll see if I come back around to that. But this series has been a lot of fun. And the thing I'm thinking about doing, I think you are all going to love. So I look forward to that, and I hope you do too. But before we go, I've got to thank the patrons, everybody who helps this show keep going. Thank you so much for your continued support. Patreon.com/falloutlorecast to get ad-free episodes, t-shirts, and stickers. Join us on our patron chat, which is coming up next week, Wednesday night, the last Wednesday of every month, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening to this before then, you still have time to sign up for this month or any future month. If you're listening to this, you know, later on, who knows, years from now. But thanks to all of our new members, Sean M, Sybil B, Josh A, and Don V, welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you are all here. And I have to shout out all of our Sentry bots, Germinator, The Main Monkey, and Era M. Thank you so much for your support as well. And before you go, we got a quick new review on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and I will read it out on a future episode. This one comes from Maxim Serbovich, who says, 5 stars. I started listening to this podcast about a month ago, and it has been something I put on every night to go to sleep. Thank you for giving us the best Fallout podcast ever. Well, thank you so much. And welcome to those of you who listen to this to go to sleep. I've heard that my voice can be very soothing and that I often will even listen to or watch videos about lore and other things in order to chill out in the evenings and kind of get ready to sleep. So I totally understand that. Thank you for being here and being a part of it. I'll see you next week with the patrons. We haven't decided on a topic yet, but I'm sure it'll be fun. Stay safe in the wasteland, and if you come across a hard-to-access location that seems to be hiding secret technology, let me know. There might be some Nuka-Cola quantum power armor paint inside. How weird. All right, see you next time. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.